Thanks, Chief, for the introduction, and thanks for the asking me to review this. I guess it was a labour of love at the beginning, and I was the chair of Stigma for 14 years, from 2000 to 2014. And one of the key things was, I guess, creating some clinical leadership about the response to syphilis as it was emerging. This was, remember, early days, there was a blips in Amsterdam, New York and London, and Sydney had seen, I think in that year, was like 10 cases, and we thought we had a problem. But actually, as you know, it sort of escalated a bit beyond then. And so bringing together all the parties was really important. One of them was to provide, one of the key tasks was to provide clinical guidance. So that's what we did. And that was partly in response to Hunter Hansfield, people who work in this field will know that he's sort of a statesman of sexual health or STIs out of Western US. And he got up at a meeting that I was at and said, "You, we need to bite the bullet and write something down on a piece of paper to guide clinical care around STI testing." And so I came back and did that. So what you'll see is our early iterations of that. And here they are all in their colourful glory, starting in a presentation that I first gave, which actually was in 2000. And then it turned into a guideline from 2002 through to 2014. And I've given each of these a slide. And I want to just highlight some of the key things. And you'll see this lovely evolution over time. And so essentially we took a punt on this. We didn't really have population-based evidence. We certainly knew the bugs, if you like, that were affecting gay men at that time, so we thought we'd just stick them down on a piece of paper and didn't say, oh, what's a reasonable frequency? We'd suggest people would have tests. Annual sounds good, and people who are a bit more risky, let's suggest more often. That's where it started. There was no evidence anywhere in the world around those sorts of figures. But you can see here, you know, this was our introduction, how we were so carefully crafting the words at that time. We didn't want to upset Medicare. As a government department, we weren't trying to tell GPs to screen people because that was a nasty word in Medicare. We needed to say it was targeted testing based on recommendations. So there was all that dancing around with words. I'm glad that we've moved beyond a lot of that. So, interestingly, some of the bubbles I've got here really highlight some of the features from that time, and you'll notice how they've evolved over time. So it was annual testing and pharyngeal and rectal culture at that time, because PCR was very new at that time and it certainly hadn't been validated for non-genital sites. And you'll see over time, and this was interesting for me to look at the evolution preparing this talk, is how we grappled with this concept of frequent partner change, because we were using that epidemiological equation, you know, RO, you know, the multiplication of an epidemic or an infection in a community about frequency of partners. And I got a lot of flack about this from certain quarters about recommending, and how do we act, you know, how is a gay man going to a sauna different to someone else, or having different partners and things. And we're really grappling with trying to get this concept of frequent partner changes without being judgmental, but just trying to describe what people were doing in their own words. And these are focused at clinicians initially, remember. So it wasn't specifically for community, but as you've known over time, that's really been adopted in the conversation. We were stronger as we went to 2005 into 3 to 6 monthly. So the SOPV is featuring again. Remember, this is before an internet seeking partners. The internet emerged at that time and recreational drugs were the thing. There was an issue came up later for those who've been around long enough where the crystal meth arrived, and then syphilis was going up and we were blaming the crystal meth for the syphilis. And so this was all became, you know, part of the conversations around guidelines. 3 monthly retesting for gonorrhea and chlamydia, and this was my saddest moment in the whole guideline development, was to put in a statement that said to consider herpes serology. We quickly got that out by the next ones. And Hep C emerged at this point as well, and there was that association with HIV positive people. And the challenge as well with our development throughout this time was getting the, you know, not trying to stigmatise HIV positive men. You know, that was some of the flack that I got. And although this was really a good example of the partnership, there were all the organisations were doing this together. So we were really clear about what we were really meaning. It was about people in care and offering testing at the time of service engagement, essentially. So you can see there, we got, this is the HIM study as well from the Kirby Institute. This is where there were more than 10 partners in 6 months, where there was an escalation in the detection of STIs when people had numbers of partners. So we were sort of nailing it as we were going on. So it's how the guidelines were used in an iterative process, where the guidelines were referred to in research, and then the research actually came back to inform the guidelines. And so, and I think you'll see today of the presentations how it's really got to a really strong point after all this time. But and 3 to 6 monthly. So we got group sex came up, got a Guernsey here, along with recreational drug use and the syphilis serology. And this was informed by some more Kirby research from mathematical modelling. If you did frequent testing, how we could turn around the epidemic of syphilis. And this was David Wilson and David Regan's group doing that modelling work. And then we moved on into the more recent ones, which are now being updated. And so NATs, the nucleic acid tests at all anatomical sites, has really replaced culture in terms of screening. And you can see here we're more confident as well in our frequency of testing, 3 monthly. And this is what, you know, the speakers coming up will say, that now we've got to a point where, in fact, we don't need to even be this detailed, because it was all getting a bit complicated about who's really needs the 3 monthly testing. And so, and the other joyful thing, I guess, about having had these guidelines, so when PrEP came along, and that was conveniently PrEP prescribing was in 3 monthly lots. And so we had this real world implementation study of the stigma guidelines being happening in the process of rolling out PrEP. So now we have the actual evidence that we guessed about way back in 2000, and we're able to see what was the yield, because before that we had no idea, and now we have some fantastic population-based evidence of high-risk gay men being tested 3 monthly, and we find, not surprisingly, thankfully, that we're on the right track here, and that we found that we're seeing high incidence and high positivity at retesting in 3 monthly period. So for me, that's been a joy to have seen that happen. And a study led by Sydney Local Health District with CHI was to actually do a survey of GPs about their knowledge and familiarity with the guidelines. And you can see here that those who had knowledge of the guidelines were more able to take sexual histories, recommended annual testing, retesting and syphilis testing. Familiarity with the guidelines wasn't quite as strong as those who had knowledge of them, but it still had a positive outcome. So we need some more novel approaches. And as I've said in other forums, it's hard to change clinical behaviour at the front line. But even more broadly, the stigma guidelines and the frequency of testing, the concepts that we put together have really been used in many other places. And I did this quick search literally on Sunday night and found these, across New South Wales, obviously, and Australia, guidelines I've been involved in myself. But it's interesting that these have been used as examples and a sort of standard, and BASH have taken 20 years to get to a guideline for gay men STI testing. And a lot of what they've recommended there is really very consistent with what we've come to now. So all I want to say is thank you for everyone. I don't want to name everyone, because there's been a lot of people over years who supported and the continued development of these guidelines. And so contributors, supporters and promoters and everyone, even those who continue to adapt and reuse them and use them in their research and refer to them. I think it's really good that we've got this thing in Australia.